Hello, Park Street. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Today is day 13 of Lent, and I'm really excited to be here recording with Ken and Sherry Van Dyne tonight. Many of you will know them. If you've been around Park Street for any length of time, you probably know who they are, but could you guys just give a brief rundown of how long you've been attending Park Street, working at Park Street, and how you got to Ashland, Ohio?
Well, I guess I'll start out. You know, we moved back to Ashland, Ohio in 1988. I had been camp director out in Shipshewana for 12 and a half years. And we came back to Ashland, actually for me to go back to work for InfoPro and help in the computer store there. As far as when we came back to Ashland, we started with Park Street immediately. It was sort of coming back to a church we'd attended while in college. So,
are you both graduates of Ashland College?
I am. We are both graduates of Ashland College, and she's a graduate of Ashland Theological Seminary.
So. Okay, cool.
Yeah, because we've been here. At least I've been here, you know, years before when we were in school, and Park Street wasn't especially my home church, because in those days you still had a home church that you went back and forth to. But both of us were brethren, so that's the fit that fits. We're brethren, so.
Yeah, who was the pastor at Park Street when you were in college?
Oh, gosh. Was it George Solomon?
George Solomon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So is he after? I was just wondering when Phil Lersh was pastor.
That was that. He was. George followed Phil.
Phil, okay.
Mm-hmm. It was more formal even then.
Oh, okay. Well, I've gotten to know Phil a little bit. He's a good guy. Maybe he'll even listen to one of these. I'm interested to see if he will or not, but cool. Anyways, thank you for that little bit of background. I guess I've known you guys for, how old am I? 34 years. Probably most of that.
Probably.
Just through camp and, Kenton is probably, 2 years older than me, so. We were in band and all that stuff, so I appreciate you guys and your family and your willingness to do this. Today's passage is John 6, 1 through 24. Do you either of you want to volunteer to read it, or should I?
I can read it. All right. I'm going to read it from the New Living Translation. After this, Jesus crossed over to the far side of the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias. A huge crowd kept following him wherever he went, because they saw his miraculous signs as he healed the sick. Then Jesus climbed a hill, sat down with his disciples around them. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration. Jesus soon saw a huge crowd of people coming to look for him. Turning to Philip, he said, "Where can we buy bread to feed all of these people?" He was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. Philip replied, "Even if we worked for months, we wouldn't have enough money to feed them." Then Andrew, who was Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "There's a young boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what good is that with this huge crowd?" "Tell everyone to sit down," Jesus said. So they all sat down on the grassy slopes. The men alone numbered about 5,000. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks to God, distributed them to the people. Afterward, he did the same with the fish, and they all ate as much as they wanted. After everyone was full, Jesus told his disciples, "Now gather the leftovers so that nothing is wasted." So they picked up the pieces, filled 12 baskets with the scraps left by the people who had eaten from the 5 barley loaves. When the people saw him do this miraculous sign, they exclaimed, "Surely he is the prophet we have been expecting." When Jesus saw that they were ready to force him to be their king, he slipped away into the hills by himself. Then at verse 16, it starts a different story. That evening, Jesus' disciples went down to the shore to wait for them. But as darkness fell and Jesus still hadn't come back, they got into the boat and headed across the lake towards Capernaum. Soon a gale swept down upon them and the sea grew very rough. They had rowed 3 or 4 miles when suddenly they saw Jesus walking on the water toward the boat. They were terrified. But he called out to them, "Don't be afraid, I'm here." Then they were eager to let him into the boat, and immediately they arrived at their destination.
Thank you. I guess we could start with maybe the first story first. Jesus, you know, miraculously increasing food. When you kind of read through this story, is there a place that stands out to you or that is noteworthy as far as something you that just is interesting or a detail that you notice?
I think my first one is he asks the question to Philip, what can we do to feed all these people? And I was, Philip was one of the disciples that was at the wedding at Canaan when Jesus turned the water into wine. So Jesus has had performed miracles large enough to Jesus had performed miracles in his presence of exactly the nature of what he was saying, let's feed all these people. And yet Philip, you know, says, wait a minute, my translation says, it's 8 months worth of wages just to give everyone a bite. You know, not enough to feed everybody, just enough to give them one bite. And yet Peter's faith, I'll just say, was small enough or lacking enough. So the question really comes back to me, you know, if Jesus asked me to, you know, what are we going to do in this situation? Is my faith big enough to say, Lord, you're capable of doing anything?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because, yeah, you're right. Philip says it's impossible, right? Like, we can't do it. And then Simon Peter does, like, half a step better. He's yeah. like, well, we have 5 loaves and 2 fish. But that's Andrew not going to really yeah. help a whole
Andrew,
lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Andrew. Simon Peter's brother spoke yeah. up. There's, yeah, he's like, well, we got a little bit. You know, he tries to maybe lighten the mood a little bit, but you're right. Both of them, I don't think, understand, I guess, the potential of what Jesus can do with something small.
And especially since the crowds that were following Jesus at this time had seen him do miraculous healings of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they were following him.
Yeah.
Not that they were coming, although I guess later we'll encounter that, you know, they were there to be fed. You
right.
know, they were following because they got a free lunch.
Yeah.
You know. But.
Yeah, you're right. Verse 2 says, a huge crowd kept following him wherever he went because they saw his miraculous signs as he healed the sick. So you're right. They are coming. They're at least interested, at least in the miracles he can perform. And.
Yeah.
If not his teaching and, you know, the other things he's doing.
This crowd, too, is probably pretty mixed as far as Gentile and Jewish, just because when it says that Jesus crossed over to the far side of the Sea of Galilee, the far side is the side that's basically their heathen, Gentile, pagan considered.
Right.
And so... this crowd could very well be, who knows, whether they're even, you know, all quite a mixture, I would think, of people. And so some may have, you know a little bit more about who Jesus is, and some don't. That's for sure.
Yeah.
They're just following. They're following. They're hungry. They're following. They're desperate people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no healing... No one has ever done these kinds of things before, and this man is healing and is giving hope and is giving.
Nobody turned around and told the crowd that Jesus is going to pass out a free meal.
No, they didn't know that.
So the people were just following because of their curiosity. I mean, what's interesting to me here is Jesus. The miracle talks about the feeding of the 5,000, but I still have to ponder in the background. Jesus fed them. But then he taught them. You know, the Gospel of John doesn't go into what he taught them while they were here on the hillside. But Jesus fed them a meal. In one sense, Jesus brought them to the table.
Yeah.
And said, here, eat with me. And then Jesus, being the teacher, would have taught them, you know, there on the hillside. And what I'm going to say... Then because the people say, man, this guy's doing all these wonderful things, we're going to make him the king. Well, Jesus said, I want no part of this.
Yeah.
Let me out of this, you know, and he disappears.
Yeah. It is interesting that he doesn't seem to be doing these things for attention.
Yeah.
He always seems to try to you know, when he heals somebody or when he does a miracle, it seems to be that he says, all right, just, you know, keep it quiet. Or he, you know, in one case, there was the, in chapter 5, there's the healing at the pool where the man who was healed, I don't think even knows, like, who Jesus, like, who it was, that, you know. So it's like, there is a lot of just, Jesus seems to be doing these things, but he's not trying to make himself more popular. It doesn't seem like he runs away from that in a lot of cases. Do you guys have any? Go ahead. I'll go ahead.
He really does run away because the one thing that I did look up, I read the account, because this story is in all four Gospels, which is not normal, but the feeding of the 5,000 is. And I wanted to read, because the last verse says, when Jesus saw they were ready to force him to be their king, he slipped away into the hills by himself. And I got to thinking about, so Jesus went into the hills by himself. Any other time that we hear about him going off into the hills by himself, it usually tells us that he's going to pray,
right,
specifically. Well, John doesn't, but the other Gospels do say that.
Yeah.
That he is going off to be by himself. And when I was first thinking about this, well, and through the context of the Bible study I lead with the women, too, we had a night when we were studying and talking about Jesus in the crowds and getting away by himself and how important that is for us to do that, too, looking at Jesus' example. But we had just come home from Africa, and I was suddenly reminded that personal space in most of this world is non-existent. Those folk... In poorer countries, they live on top of each other.
Yeah.
Their bedrooms are all together.
Yeah.
They live in one room, huts or outside, they hang out. And Jesus would have been in that kind of a context, family living
yeah.
on top of family. And if he wanted any kind of alone time at all, he had to get away.
Yeah.
And so it was like this context again. People everywhere, all kinds of things, everybody happening. And Jesus like, I'm done. I got to have some time with my Father. And he goes off and recharges, kind of, is what we think about
yeah.
and say.
No, I think that's interesting.
Cool.
There is a balance between Jesus is around people all the time, or at least we have a lot of interactions with Jesus and
yeah.
you know, other people. And yet he's also, you know, really his time alone with God in prayer, like you said, is something that he seems to really value. They both go together in some kind of balance,
yeah.
which is like kind of interesting. I have a couple questions. One is, what have you learned, I guess, over your years of experience in this and ministry experience of balancing out your ministry with your own person, you know, with your own relationship with God? And if you don't want to answer that one, or you have a better story for this one, I was wondering also, you know, when Jesus tests Philip and says, you know, where can we buy bread to feed all these people, you know? And have you had experiences in your life where you felt like, I mean, I guess that you'd be willing to share, where you felt like there was really no way out and God created a way?
Yeah.
I guess, so either of you want to take a shot at either one of those questions?
I remember earlier in our marriage that, I mean, we were both on part-time jobs, you know, still going to school, we were tithing, but I mean, we made so little that, you know, our tithe wasn't very big,
right.
But, nevertheless, we were still tithing. We're giving our, I don't know what it was, 10, 20 bucks. But it came to a point at the end of 1 month that, you know, there really wasn't any money left over. And I thought, well, I'll just hold it for a little bit and I'll make it up next week. Well, that went by for about 3 weeks and then the car broke. It took all of our tithe money that I'd been saving to fix the car. And God said to me, just as plain as day, if I can't have it, you can't have it. God would have made my car run whether it needed to or not.
Yeah.
I mean, God was in control. And you know, that's an illustration for tithing, but yet it's the principle is still the same. God's in control of all situations. We may not know whether, you know, how to get through the stormy weather, which is where we're coming next, we may not know, you know, how to handle this certain situation, but God is still in control, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we just have to wade through the muck, if you want to put it that in that nice farmer sense, to come out and find out what's on the other side was good and intended by God.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Well, I'll take the other question, because for me, the only way I survive is I'm a morning person and I get up early and I have time every day with Jesus. Is it quality every day? Heavens, no. Is it perfect every day? No. Is it something highlighted? No. And yet, I try to be as consistent and as I journal and I try to read scripture and pray, and that's when I study sometimes, you know, sometimes for if I'm leading things or doing things. But without that time, I just hate it. I don't like it without that time.
Yeah.
I just feel lost or something. And I'm not good at night, so I have to do it in the morning. So forget night.
Yeah, I feel like as I've gotten older and just now with young kids, I feel like in order to do the normal things I have to do, it requires a more intentional time of, I don't know, prayer or worship or just some type of communion with God. And it's been interesting to me how much or how little, like, I guess, you know, like you talk about, like, maybe like filling up a car with gas, like you fill up the car with a tank of gas and it's like, my tank's empty real fast and it needs continually, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm surprised at how often I need to continue to go back. Maybe, you know, daily, and not even saying if I always do this, but it's like, I've noticed times where it's like, I felt like I've had time with God that's been meaningful to me, and within a very short amount of time, you're back in, like, you know, it's just been interesting to me to see how necessary it is and how it really is like eating, right? Like, you have to eat, or at least I guess we eat. Most, I guess a lot of people in the world eat one big meal a day. But, you know, if you're not eating consistently or daily, you know, it catches up to you pretty quickly. Yeah. And I feel like the same has been true of me spiritually. It's like if I'm operating out of a place of spiritual hunger, then all the other functions of my life are gonna lack, you know, and not have the same kind of, I guess, fruitfulness as what I would see as if I've spent time, you know.
I heard with a speaker Jesus one time. Oh, I couldn't even tell who it was or anything because it was so long ago. I was probably a young mom, and the point was that you needed to serve, minister, worship, all of those things out of your overflow and not out of your reserve tank.
Yeah.
And it's always been true for me. I can tell when my reserves are getting pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that. It's interesting that Jesus takes this little amount of food, but then John makes the point to say that they picked up the pieces and filled 12 baskets with scraps left over.
Yeah.
You know, just the idea that there was really nothing. These people were hungry. They didn't plan out, right? Like you said, they were following around and didn't think about, oh, we might get hungry. Or maybe they didn't, you know, I don't know if they thought about that or not, but it's like Jesus takes that situation and he abundantly provides more than what is necessary.
Which see, I've think wondered, too, if they were so many hours from home that even if they took provisions, it was gone.
Right.
And so there was nothing left to, you know, to get them back home with. But that's just an amount of people that I can hardly picture. Because when you count just the men, and there are about 5,000, you know, there's women and children, probably 10 more thousands, you know. And
yeah.
I've been to stadiums and stuff where there's that many people. And can you imagine that many people sitting around Jesus, sitting on the ground, sitting, putting them in groups, getting them organized, I don't know. It's just, that number is boggling.
Yeah, it is. It is. Let's take a few minutes and just kind of chat about the second part of the walking on the water.
Yeah.
Because
the Sea of Galilee, I know from past and from other studies, and most people probably know that the Sea of Galilee, even today, is known as a body of water that has storms very abruptly, without warning, and huge often. And so even, and their boats were little then, and their, you know, they didn't have all the safety things that we have and all the sonar and I don't know what all, the communication systems and stuff. So the disciples are out there and they're taken by surprise and scared to death in what's, you know, and think they're dying. And there they are in the middle of the lake and Jesus is not with them.
Yeah. Well, it says they had rowed, after it says in verse 18, the gale swept down and the sea grew rough. They rowed for 3 or 4 miles, which I would imagine was fairly exhausting to do that.
And probably didn't get too far, probably.
Right. And I don't know how long the... I feel like I've heard... I don't know where or how. I couldn't tell you if this is accurate information, so I guess you might have to fact check me. But it says... I don't know how far wide the Sea of Galilee was. I don't know that it was like 8 or 10 miles, something like that. Is it?
It's not very big.
It's not huge, but it's like they were... It seems like they're kind of right, like they can't go back. You know, they're out mm-hmm. just far enough.
They're committed.
They're yeah. just committed to the middle yeah. of the lake, and it's like, do we go back? Do we go forward? Do we go up? Do we go down? And they really have nowhere to go, and they really are stuck. You know, and they've been rowing, and so they're tired, and that's not getting them anywhere either.
Nope. And I mean, then the text is simple here that Jesus says to them, "It's I, don't be afraid." You know, does that statement, as simple as it is, does that literally make the disciples lose their fear? You know, this particular passage doesn't say, "Storm, be still." It just says when Jesus got in the boat, immediately the boat reached the shore.
Yeah.
You know, which, they're there.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, was the storm still going on? We don't know. But it's still the fact that Jesus gives a simple command. And I still have to come back and as a disciple in the boat, you know, are my fears released when I hear Jesus give that simple command? You know, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid. But it's also coming back and saying what we said in the previous, I'm in control of this situation.
Yeah.
You know, yes, there's a storm going on. So what? You know, I'm in control.
Yeah. And I have a note here on my phone that says, in 6:20, it says, don't be afraid, I am here. It says, or the I am is here.
Yeah.
See Exodus 3:14, which is the story of the burning bush where, you know, Moses, yeah. God comes to Moses and says, you know, take off your sandals on holy yeah. ground. And the idea is that, you know, that God is, Jesus is God. He's, you know, equated with God. And it's funny, it says like verse 21 says, then they were eager to let him in. It's like, after they rowed, after they freaked out, after they let everything go wrong, after, you know, nothing worked, then Jesus shows up and it's like, okay, you can come in now. It's like, I feel like that's so, I find that to be, in my life, it's like, I do not naturally go to Jesus to solve my problems. I tend to ask him to solve my problems once all other options have failed. I don't know if that resonates with you or not, but it's like, especially the bigger problems, it's just like, you know, God is able and willing to take care of things for us to the degree we let him in the boat, which I think is interesting. It takes a while, you know, it's not a natural thing, you know, to see Jesus walking on the water, I would imagine, right? It's not something you typically see every day. That would be a little bit, I would be wondering what was going on or if I was hallucinating or, you know, I'd be scared or, you know, I don't know what they were feeling. You know, it's not normal.
No.
Well, I thank you guys for recording this episode. I appreciate it. And thanks to everybody for listening. We're going to keep going. There's plenty of episodes more, and I think we might do another one of these in the future, if that's all right with you guys. Does that sound good?
Sure.
All right, cool.